Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Well, today we go to the movies with Tulsa World film critic Michael Smith. And yes, there are films beyond the force, but according to my guest today, this holiday film year is shaping up to be very different than most. Studios have shied away from the traditional pre-Christmas opening because of the Star Wars effect. And those who have released their films during this time are being crowded out by the sheer number of screens showing The Force Awakens. Yet there are plenty of films to talk about, and Michael Smith joins us to indeed talk about films, award favorite performances, as well as a few sleepers out there as well. Michael Smith is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Michael Smith, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich, for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you back. It's the end of the year film time, and of course, this is a great thing to do during the holidays. Once Christmas is over, it's what are we going to do? Well, let's go to a movie. And so we're here to talk about a movie as well as about 100 other movies that are out there. And really, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, it's sucking up an awful lot of screens here in Tulsa.
That's the movie you speak of, the elephant in the room, the Chewbacca in the room, whatever you care to think of it. It's really something. Of course, it set box office records over the weekend here in America. And just doing incredible business. It's a time of thing. I tried to get a lot of information out there in our paper this past week. Go to the movie. Don't be worried. They want your money. They are making lots of showtimes available. There were 47 showtimes a day available just at the Warren Theater, wow. 40 at AMC, 30 plus. There were 200 showtimes plus available in this city alone. So it was out there to be seen, and the Warren, I know, they've got 18 screens, and they put it on 9 of them. So, yeah, it kind of crowded out some other films.
And it was really, if you went and saw it on the opening weekend, it was an event. It really was. It was just kind of one of those weird film things that perhaps everyone listening has seen it, but if you haven't seen it yet, I think your review said it's well worth it.
Oh, my goodness. I consider myself to be a casual fan. I saw the first film in 1977, at age 13, I was the target audience for that film, and yet a casual fan. I did not see another Star Wars film in theaters until the new one last week. And I got to see it a couple of days early. I went in skeptical. I'd been hyped to death over the last month. Everything Star Wars, every commercial is about Star Wars.
Right. You know, lipstick. They spent very little actual money marketing the film. They did tie-ins with businesses that they marketed the film.
There was no need to, absolutely. The awareness among the American public was very high.
So your skepticism was high.
Oh, my goodness. It was one of those things I absolutely went in with. Can this really meet expectations? And then I just found myself nearly wanting to step out of my chair and cheer at times. It was that good. It was that well-made, well-executed, so full of creative imagination. The great mix of the old favorite characters, the Han Solo and the Chewbacca types, with these new characters that are so well constructed, so ready to take this franchise, of course, into the future with more films.
Yeah. And what I found at the showing I went to, it was like a theatrical event. First time Han Solo is seen on the screen, everybody applauds.
Well,
everybody applauded. It was like a live theater where, okay, here comes the star out onto the stage, and we applaud.
Absolutely.
And the same thing with Carrie Fisher. You know, it was weird.
Absolutely. It's so funny. When I watched it, I actually had to go to Dallas. There were very limited press screenings, but I saw it with about 100 other critics at a screening in Dallas. And, of course, it was more kind of a there's no cheering in the press box type of thing. It was very reserved and everything. But I thought as soon as that opening minute, that Star Wars flashes onto the screen, that thunderous John Williams score, those words start scrolling to give us our basic synopsis at the start, I thought, theaters across the country, there is going to be cheering at this moment. Yeah. And then I thought there's going to be cheering the first moment they see Han Solo. Then the cheers, I'm sure, went on through several screenings.
And when I saw it, I didn't share your skepticism because I think by that time the reviews were out and everybody said it was a great film. But what I was surprised at was how this film fit totally into the conventions of the franchise. You knew what was going to happen. And you still said, this was awesome.
Well,
I mean, most of the events, you know, it's a soap opera and you know exactly everything that's going to happen along the journey without giving anything away. It was still really enjoyable to watch, even though there were a few twists and turns, but it was basically you know, if you'd seen the previous films, you know, you could see these points that were going to happen through the film.
Well, again, as a casual fan, perhaps, I found myself surprised again and again.
Oh, okay,
and
there
I
you
just,
go.
I'm not the type to sit in a movie usually and watch it from a critical point of view and find my mouth ajar, my jaw dropped, and I literally found myself thinking, Michael Smith, close your mouth. My goodness, what are you? It was quite a wonderful experience. And, you know, it's the kind of thing where you did watch it and you couldn't help but notice all the parallels to the first film from 1977, which is they call Episode 4, but it's the first film that was ever made, and all those parallels, and yet they won me over completely. I thought, really? They're going to repeat some of these?
Yeah,
that person's that villain. And no, it was just, oh, my goodness. It just draws you in and takes you into its world.
Do you think that like that summer of 77, when I remember you were 13, I think I was 16 or 17, and all your friends were going to see that film over and over and over during the summer. Do you think it's going to be that sort of film?
I'm very curious about that. We live in such a different age.
It's
live
true.
In the age of the opening weekend, where the big thing back then was I had a friend who saw it 60 times.
Right.
The big thing now is if you didn't see it opening weekend, if you didn't see it opening night, you're behind. You are running behind. But from everything I'm hearing, it has one of the highest rates that are being reported of people saying, oh, yes, I'm going back for another time. At least one other time, maybe more.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from Star Wars. There are other films out this this holiday season. For, you know, somebody who doesn't go to films a whole lot but is looking for a good film during the holidays, mm-hmm. what's probably the number two choice behind seeing Star Wars? Or if you're not into Star Wars, what would be the best film out there is right now?
Well, and that's a very valid point, because there are going to be people who, unless they're doing the reserved seat ticketing, they're literally going to go, and maybe they have a party of four that wants to go to the holidays to a film and are going to find it. Well, we can't really get seats right now except the front row, so let's look for something else. And there's a lot of really good options out there. There's a lot of different ways to go, too. I think you could go with maybe a new film that opens Wednesday, perhaps, that I think is one of the best pictures this year, and that's called The Big Short. It's a financial comedy. It's about the 2008 collapse of the U.S. economy, the collapse of the housing market, and about four nerds, is a way to put it pretty much, kind of outsiders of the financial system who saw that the housing market was going to collapse and found a way to profit basically off the banker's stupidity, or fraud, as you might want to put it. An all-star cast. If you still don't know what this movie is, maybe you'll know it as the one that has Christian Bale, Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Brad Pitt, and several other co-stars. Tracy Letts has a wonderful role in it. Tulsa's Tracy Letts, who wrote August Osage County. Big cast, big laughs. A big surprise to me. I go into this thinking, okay, a big financial film, a comedy, and who's the director of this film that's only going to be up for Oscars? It's Adam McKay, the writer-director of many Will Ferrell films like Anchorman,
right.
The Ron Burgundy Story. Again, another thing, I'm just overwhelmed by how good the film was.
Now, if you're not a Will Ferrell fan, and there are some people who really love Will Ferrell and there are people who really hate Will Ferrell, this is not the same sort of film you would see a Will Ferrell film, where it's just goofy beyond reproach. It's a very intelligent film.
Quite the opposite. It's one of the smartest films I've seen all year. One of the smartest and one of the funniest at the same time. Based on a best-selling book by Michael Lewis. If you want to talk about a smart film, I just so enjoyed Moneyball, the Brad Pitt film that was based on a Michael Lewis book. That was one of the smartest films of this year. This one's one of the smartest of this year and one of the funniest. Big laughs.
Out of
a financial movie.
Yeah,
yes.
The Big Short, yeah. And that opens Wednesday here in Tulsa.
That opens Wednesday.
Now, generally, in Tulsa, you'll see a lot of films that open in New York, Los Angeles, maybe Chicago, right at the end of the holidays to get Oscar consideration, but we won't see them until January. Is the same true this year?
That is true. There's a couple of big films like that. There's a couple of smaller films like that that wait until really sometimes those Oscar nominations come
out. So what should we be looking for?
Most immediately, the ones you're talking about opening in New York and L.A. that are doing that this week, we would be talking about The Revenant. This is the film starring Leonardo DiCaprio, 1820s frontiersman, a survival story, a revenge story. This is a movie that's going to be in my top 10 when that comes out next week. It is a remarkable story of survival. A frontier guide, he's mauled by a bear, left abandoned by the other men with him for dead. He survives and goes to get his revenge and get some justice as well. And it's, I do believe, after all this time, I think Leonardo DiCaprio is going to win his Best Actor Oscar for this film.
Really? It's that good?
It is.
Now, I've heard
good.
Nothing about this film.
Oh, it's going to be pretty big. It's directed by the same filmmaker who made Birdman last year and won all the Oscars.
Oh, right, right.
This is one he went out really into the frontier, and it looks it. It's amazing. It was filmed in all natural light.
Wow.
So it has got a look to it that is remarkable. I honestly came out of that thinking, well, that reminded me of like the visual experience of Dances with Wolves, but the psychological experience of maybe Dances with Wolves meets Martin Scorsese, perhaps. It's violent. It's adventure-filled. It's a pretty remarkable film.
And when do we expect that film to open here?
That will open here in Tulsa on January 8th.
Okay.
The other one that opens in places on Friday, Christmas Day, New York and L.A., but will be here the following week, is The Hateful Eight. And this is the new film from Quentin Tarantino. This is going to open here. They've moved it up a little. It was going to be January 8th. Now it's going to open on Thursday, December 31st. So New Year's Eve, The Hateful Eight will be available here.
Now, have you seen that one yet?
I have seen that one. And it's classic Quentin Tarantino. I mean, it's the kind of film only one person on this planet, I think, can make. And he works with Harvey Weinstein, who lets Quentin Tarantino make any kind of movie he wants to make. And it's unusual. These two films I'm talking about are really basically Westerns.
Right.
Which have not been a genre that's done well at the box office. But Quentin Tarantino films do well at the box office. This is a movie that is 3 hours and 7 minutes long.
Wow.
This is a movie that has a 12-minute intermission.
It does. When was the last time we had a film with an intermission?
I really don't remember. I cannot go back to the last time I literally had to stop, go out of the theater, and come back a few minutes later for the second half of the film. It's a kind of a locked-door mystery. This is a kind of a Sergio Leone meets Agatha Christie's Ten Little Indians. It's set during a blizzard, all these people trapped inside of a haberdashery, Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell,
right.
Tim Roth.
I mean, it's got a who's who cast.
That's right. A lot of people in it, a lot of people you know from working with Quentin Tarantino, and they're all out for revenge as well. So we'll see. There's some dark themes at the box office.
So Revenant and The Hateful Eight, well, the two Westerns, which is kind of weird at this time of year.
It's odd, but we'll see if the Western is back.
Yeah. Now, there are other two films that open right around Christmas Day that people, I think, are looking forward to, and that is the new David O. Russell film, Joy, with continuing that relationship with Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on that?
Boy, I'm a big David O. Russell fan. I mean, this is a guy who his last three films have been The Fighter, Silver Linings Playbook, and American Hustle. American Hustle was my number one film of a couple of years ago. Silver Linings Playbook, of course, Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper, Robert De Niro. This new movie has Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper, Robert De Niro. David O. Russell knows a winning formula. I think he's come up a little short here. That's a kind of all I can say. I'm embargoed to put out that until a couple of days from now, but right. It doesn't quite match up to his previous three films. It felt like he was a little hamstrung, maybe. It was his first PG-13 film rather than an R-rated film. But Joy, with Jennifer Lawrence playing essentially the Joy Mangano character that maybe you know from Home Shopping, the inventor of the Miracle Mop, mm-hmm. kind of a young business entrepreneur who faces a lot of challenges in a very chauvinistic 1980s workplace.
Hmm. Now, the other film that's opening, I believe, right around Christmas Day is Concussion, which is that's also gotten a lot of buzz earlier from being in the news, you know, the whole issue of pro sports injuries.
Of course.
And it's about the man who discovered CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And that's Will Smith playing this doctor that sort of comes up with this. What have you seen this movie, and what's your thoughts?
I have not. I see this one tomorrow, actually, so that I can have the review for Friday. But you're exactly right. It's about the fellow who discovered this inside the brain of NFL Hall of Famer Mike Webster, the center of the Pittsburgh Steelers from all those great Terry Bradshaw teams. And you can imagine how many hits that a center's head takes during a 15-year career.
And you got a really wonderful conspiracy story with the NFL, you know, trying to hide this. And so it sounds like it's a conspiracy film.
It does.
Yeah. My guest today is Michael Smith, a film critic for the Tulsa World, as we're talking about holiday films today on Studio Tulsa. Now, if you're like me, you're so busy, you just don't have often time to go out to the movies. And so this is during the downtime around the holidays, we go catch a few. There are several films that have been high profile early this fall that are still playing, and that's sort of a testament to the film. If you have a film that was released in October and is still playing now, given the Star Wars phenomenon, then it has to be a pretty good film and doing good business. And I'm going to mention three, and that's Spectre, the new James Bond film, Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks, and The Martian with Matt Damon. So all three you thought were good films?
Yes, I thought the Martian was a lot of fun, a big crowd pleaser of a film that, you know, we've got a number of dark films out there this year. This is one of those films that kind of might really sneak into the Oscar race because it's so positive. It's so yay for that American ingenuity spirit that, you know, we can get to Mars, we can get a man back, and that could do really well there. That's one of those that we're, honestly, when we're in that time where you can't get into Star Wars, that's kind of, you came to see a blockbuster, that movie is a blockbuster and on an epic scale. You can catch that. The other one you mentioned.
Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies. Gosh, that's one of my favorite films this year. I mean, that's one of those where if you think of putting together director Steven Spielberg with Tom Hanks, who he's worked with before, this is a really exceptional film. The story of him playing an attorney who's negotiating the release, or rather the exchange, of prisoners at the Berlin Wall in 1962, a very touchy moment in the Cold War, based on the true story of the spy pilot Gary Francis Powers, who went down, and we did make an exchange of a Russian prisoner for him. And it's just an exceptional film, a beautiful film to look at, great score. It's one of my favorites this year.
Well, now, we haven't mentioned the James Bond film. What did you think of that?
Well, yeah, you know, right up there, you know, the James Bond film Spectre and Mockingjay, too, the final Hunger Games film. These are another couple of blockbusters that if you can't get into Star Wars, go see them. I loved Spectre. Now, Skyfall was one that I respected the film, but I really thought it was so dark. I thought it kind of took some of the fun out of James Bond, and I really wanted James Bond to have a little fun again, and I think they kept some of those dark tones and injected some of his fun back in.
Well, Daniel Craig Bond is a darker Bond than we've seen.
It is, and I've respected that ever since Casino Royale, which I think is just right up there as one of the best Bonds ever.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about maybe some smaller films that are still playing but are maybe on the verge of leaving, and maybe you want to go to tonight. that one would be Trumbo, which is still playing at the Circle, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually looking forward to this because I think Dalton Trumbo is a fascinating fixture. Did you enjoy the film?
Yes, and that has a wonderful performance in it from Bryan Cranston that, you know, I think it surprised a lot of people in the last week or so that is a movie that when they had the Screen Actors Guild Award nominations, that was the leader in the nominations for among the ensemble, for Bryan Cranston as Dalton Trumbo, for Helen Mirren in a supporting performance as a Hedda Hopper. It's the kind of thing, you know, again, sometimes we look at those and go, okay, well, there's Hollywood loving Hollywood again. But anybody who loves those stories about old Hollywood, kind of that golden age of Hollywood type of thing, Trumbo's going to be a movie that they can see for that, as well as the, you know, very interesting story of a man who's trying to get his name back.
Right.
Been on the blacklist.
Right. And contrasting that, another small film, Room, which you love.
Room is going to be in my top 10 when I put that list out next week. Room is a very unique indie film about a young woman kidnapped, held prisoner for 7 years by a man in a garden shed in the backyard. Her son, her 5-year-old son, who we meet in the film, born in captivity there. I know, this sounds terrible. This is one of the most life-affirming films you will see. It's not all spent in the garden shed. Let me just say that. A remarkable performance by young Brie Larson, who I think is maybe the odds-on favorite to win Best Actress. If you have a film to see this, if you're the type who doesn't want to, you like to go into the Oscars knowing about the movies, I wouldn't miss this because I think she's maybe going to win Best Actress, and the young five-year-old boy who plays her son in it gives one of the single best child performances I have ever seen. I think he may be a young supporting actor nominee, maybe.
Another Best Actor candidate is Charisse Ronan for Brooklyn. I've heard lots of good things about this performance.
Well, Brooklyn is just a beautiful film to watch. You can really get entranced just watching it. It's a young woman's immigrant experience, 1950s, coming from Ireland to Brooklyn. And, I mean, goodness, her early time in Ireland, you're entranced by the Emerald Isle. It's just so gorgeous to look at Ireland. And then she comes to Brooklyn in 1950, and it's the cleanest, most wonderful-looking Brooklyn you've ever seen in your life. Coney Island looks like it was just constructed. I mean, it's gorgeous, the outfits. And add to that, she just gives one of these luminous performances. She's been around. She's been a child actress for a while, nominated for a supporting actor when she was a youth for Atonement about a decade ago. And now I think she's going to be up there with Brie Larson, maybe the two favorites for the Best Actress Oscar.
Any other films that we should be thinking about, seeing before they're gone?
Goodness, it really is a matter of, honestly, with last weekend when Star Wars The Force Awakens opened, that took a lot of films out that I could have recommended right there. We're talking about The Martian. I think that might be on at maybe two theaters here in town still, maybe one. It's honestly a matter of having to check. With movies coming out this week for Christmas, four new ones opening on Christmas Day. We talked about Joy and Concussion as well as a couple of other films that we haven't mentioned yet. It's really going to take some of those out. I mean, tonight, to see almost anything else on a screen, because everything else is going to be Star Wars and what's come out within the last 2 weeks.
What films should we avoid where we save our money? Go to the later screening of something else.
Well, let's see here. I've got to work on my most disappointing movies of the year list as well. I can tell you the one that I was really disappointed that's still in theaters right now and just barely hanging on. That's In the Heart of the Sea. And I hate to see that. Ron Howard's an Oklahoma native. I love his films, but this is one that it just didn't work for me. The big whale movie, basically the story on which the writing of the book Moby Dick is based. And it's one of those where I don't know why it cost a fortune to make, because the CGI whales, they're only in it for a few minutes. They don't look very real, and yet they are far more interesting than any of the actors on screen. So it's one of those things where, you know, I think kind of a, what was that TV show they used to have, that Movies for Guys Who Love Movies kind of thing. It's one of those guy movies things, right, that I go in thinking, this should be a great adventure. And, it was a big disappointment.
There are a couple of holiday films, holiday-themed films. One, there's like three buddies that are going out. They go out on Christmas Eve. It's a Seth Rogen film.
The Night Before, yes.
Yeah. Any words, positive, negative, on that one?
That is one, you know, that he kind of has his audience, you know. Yeah. If you're familiar with his film from a couple of years ago, maybe This Is the End, what he did last Christmas, The Interview. He has his audience. If you're looking for that raunchy, R-rated good time for the holidays, The Night Before could be your option of three guys trying to find what they've been told is the ultimate Christmas party.
Michael, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Tulsa World film critic Michael Smith speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa about the end of the year films at the box office. You can read his reviews of those films as well as his best of the year list in the Tulsa World. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Jeff Nix.
A lot of modern movie makers have dealt with the absence of new ideas by making movies based on existing popular movies, picking up the storylines of sequels, or picking up the storyline before it becomes the original movie as a prequel. The rest of Hollywood spins out movies about vampires, the undead, and science fiction, and since I never learned science, science fiction is totally lost on me. So let's look at sequels and prequels. The original idea was to take advantage of a storyline that continues to evolve after a hit movie, Star Wars being the best example of the use of the sequel and, I suppose, the prequel. But to many of us, the sequel-prequel idea should have stopped with Star Wars. But when Rocky became an unexpected runaway hit, Rocky II can be forgiven, but not Rocky's III through, what, 27, 28? And sequels should have been outlawed after Hangover. I mean, four unlikable guys get absurdly drunk and do stupid stuff, seen it, done it. But common sense, originality, and reason will never enter the consciousness of Hollywood because studios have to churn out movies, good plot or no. So, since there are so few new ideas out there and so many would-be movie makers, we're likely to see more and more past hits turned into sequel. So, will we pretty soon see The Pretty Good Gatsby? Maybe The Sun Also Rises Again? How about the classic The Ten Commandments, sequelized as Commandments 11 through 20? The Greatest Story Ever Told produces Here's Another Pretty Good Story. And maybe The Kids of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? High Noon yields Later That Same Day, and maybe the prequel Somewhere Around Mid-Morning. And maybe we'll have the Gone with the Wind trilogy, the original, then the sequel, Gone Even Further with the Wind, followed by the prequel, boy, it sure is getting windy out there. Speaking of which, why not sequels of hit novels? Will we soon see more crimes and more punishment? Maybe the third baseman in the rye? War, peace, and other stuff. And speaking of Tolstoy, I've always imagined a friend of his meeting Tolstoy on the street and saying, Leo, haven't seen you in a while. What are you working on? Tolstoy says, I'm about halfway through my newest novel. Friend says, what do you call it? Tolstoy says, so far, I call it War. But I digress. And how about sequelizing and prequelizing plays? Will we soon see Burial of a Salesman? And maybe a prequel, Willie Loman Gets Really, Really Sick. There was a trend in music a few years back called the answer song, where the first hit would make a statement and a follow-up song by a different artist would provide a response. Please Help Me, I'm Falling led to I Can't Help You, Darling, Cause I'm Falling Too. In that vein, I always wanted to write an answer song like Think Twice, It's Not All Right, and She Is Heavy, She's My Sister. But the trend was mercifully short and died without my help. And no worry about today's music being responded to, because who knows what modern lyrics are saying in the first place. So, although there have been some sequels that were as good as the original, with most, there just isn't enough left to make a full movie. However, I have heard rumors of a studio that's considering going back and remaking Bambi and following up with a sequel, Bambi Goes to College. Stay tuned.
Jeff Nix is an attorney, a former concert promoter, and a contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that is Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. This is our final new episode of the year. We'll have the best of Studio Tulsa after Christmas. And in the days leading up to Christmas, we'll have a series of holiday specials. We'll be back with new programs in the new year. And on behalf of my producer, Scott Gregory, and I, we thank you for listening in 2015 and hope you will keep listening in 2016. We hope you have a joyous holiday season. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.